All right. So we met in executive session. We made no decisions. It was discussion only in information, and we gave no direction. So that brings us to item 8, the CEO's report.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We did have.
Oh no, we have item
7K.
Thank you very much for that, Chair, for reminding me. We have 7K. It's the appointment of the Secretary and Treasurer. At this time, Mr. Amelon is no longer able to fulfill that position, and we need to have a person appointed to that. As was alluded to in the memo that went out with it, it would make sense to have that person located in Ketchikan in order to be available to sign documents. So with that, I guess I had open nominations.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I won't nominate myself, but I wouldn't object.
Okay.
If somebody chose to do so.
Mr. Chair?
This is Derek. I'd like to nominate Jeremy Biden.
I nominate Jeremy.
I'll second it.
Is there any other nominations? Any other nominations? Hearing and seeing none, we have one nomination of Jeremy Bynum to be appointed as the Secretary and Treasurer. I guess with unanimous consent or the show of hands, or do you want to vote on it to put it in the record, Sharon?
Sure.
All right.
Yes.
So do I have a motion to appoint Jeremy as the acting Secretary and Treasurer, or the Secretary and Treasurer?
I make the motion to nominate or to make Jeremy the acting or the full-time Secretary and Treasurer located in Ketchikan.
Thank you. Do I have the second?
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing and seeing none, Sharon, would you take a vote, please? Call the roll.
Hi, Sanka.
Yes.
Bynum?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings?
Yep.
Hagerman.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. That appointment stands. Jeremy as the Secretary and Treasurer moves us on then to the CEO report. Trey, what do you have for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep my comments relatively brief, but I'll touch on a couple of important items. First of all, safety. I'd just like to point out that we've had no work-related recordable or lost time incidents since my last report from our last board meeting. So I'm very proud of that. We had a lot of work, a lot of it, I would say, you know, at elevated risk. We had the Tai intake, which very complicated and challenging work environment there. And that was safely performed. Also, you know, we've had a lot of brushing activity, safely performed the whole submarine cable lay. Just a lot of work was accomplished and done safely. I'm just going to jump here pretty quick. Coronavirus, I'm not going to linger on that too much. You know, we're adjusting as needed to keep our employees safe and the public as well. So the governmental affairs and external activities.
Trey, I'm sorry, one second. I just have a quick question for you. Has there been any thought into mandating vaccine given the importance of every position that we have and the limited staff that we have?
So I'm not mandating the vaccine. I will say that all of our staff in the office is vaccinated and nearly everybody in the field is vaccinated. But I'm not sure that I'm willing to go to a mandate.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, In my report, I talk quite a bit. There's just a lot going on. The last few months has been very, very busy on the legislative front, both at the Fed and state level. There's a lot going on, and I'm not going to recap it all. It's detailed pretty well in the packet. I will just linger for just a second on, I think, one element that's worth talking about a little bit. And I've mentioned a couple of opportunities throughout the day that I'm pursuing for potential funding. And I think there's a unique opportunity at this time. It kind of depends on how the infrastructure bills and all that roll out on the federal level. But there's really strong support for broadband, reliability, reliance, all those elements. There's not always a lot of support for direct funding for hydro projects specific, but on these other elements, I think there's going to be a lot of money that's going to flow. And so right now I'm working, the staff is assisting on putting together an estimate, to revisit SkyWrap, which for those that weren't here several years ago, staff proposed this to the board and ended up the board preferred we went a different direction at the time. And it's essentially a mechanically wrapped fiber that goes right on your transmission line. And it would solve some problems that we've been fighting for a very, very long time on communications. It would certainly increase our reliability for communications to our sites. And so I think this has some good merit, and it's a nice fit for some of the potential funding I see coming down the pike. And it's an expensive project, but as you guys well know, we spend a lot of money on trying to solve these communication issues that we have, where some of these plants are down in the holes. We can't get adequate satellite coverage. And then a side benefit of this is that there might be some ability to use that to enhance, if you will, the backbone, an alternative routing for communications for a few of the member communities as well, because it would create another fiber path from north to south. So I think it's a good, prudent thing for us to look at in detail right now and get our numbers situated. So if the opportunity arises, I've got this in my hip pocket that I could float it out as a potential another CAPSIS project. And I saw you had a question there, Jeremy.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, you already capped on what I was going to basically ask was whether or not this would be something that could be utilized by member communities on top of what their existing capacity might be. And you answered that, so thank you.
Yeah, I think there'd probably be some opportunity. We've been approached, I believe, by GCI interested in putting some fiber on our poles. And I think that, you know, this creates another opportunity to potentially, we could sell some pipe, or at least some pipe anyway. To entities as a backup pathway, if you will. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'd be interested in any feedback the board might have on pursuing this potential opportunity. Just nothing firm, but just some input.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to weigh in. At Petersburg, our plant is continually bugging Robert about communication issues between us and Tai'i, and this sounds like a great opportunity to resolve that once and for all. If there's a pathway to some infrastructure money coming out of the feds and through the state, I think we should go for it. I think it's a great idea. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, if I add one thing.
Go ahead, Robert.
looking at a 96 fiber wrap, it basically repeats the backbone that we have to Wrangell. There's only a single backbone right now, I believe, coming from Ketchikan to Wrangell. And it's high risk. It's failed multiple times. So that backup, really, that new pipe would be a redundant path and make the resiliency increase. But also, we could split out a couple hairs, drop to the plant, and make them dedicated for SEPA. So we could be completely isolated and cyber secure as well. So there's also that. You know, right now, we work on cybersecurity nonstop. People are getting, you know, ransomware and all kinds of fun stuff. We do not want our plants to get taken over by cybersecure hackers. So fiber, when you've got a dedicated pair, you're not going through anybody but yourself, your own switches, your own fiber. That would be the ultimate, because right now we're going through space and we're on a satellite mesh network, but you know, there's still some way to, if they could hack the satellite, there's possible ways to get in. So, you know, we're always looking for those means of attack, but that would super secure our system.
Yeah, thanks, Robert, for pointing out that is the other component that is certainly on the radar of all the legislators that I've talked to so far regarding this issue. It's cybersecurity. You know, including Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy, hyper focused on it, actually. So I think there's some great opportunity there, and I'm going to continue to pursue it, and then we'll circle back to the board when we have more information.
Good, thank you.
Yeah. You know, I'm always trying to brainstorm where those opportunities are at, right? Because if you're don't have them pre-prepared and have the numbers behind them when the opportunity presents itself, then typically you lose out. So I think it's a good effort. Moving along, I'm just going to hit on a couple of other things here. We talked about the reclamation fund a little bit, at least during the audit wrap up and such. I will say that it's just a little bit of a update to what I wrote in my memo is that I've actually got a response from the DNR office in Juneau, and they've reviewed our recommended changes to the individual contract that we would sign when we transition off the existing contract for our reclamation fund contribution. And that's pretty much all been accepted by them. And right now we're only waiting for Kodiak Electric and Copper Valley Electric to work out their individual contracts, because they're not comfortable severing the existing contract until they know what the alternative is, if you will. So I'm encouraging them to get after it. I'd like to get this done before all the players change. So we're making that. That's actually a pretty big significant deal. This is something we've been working on since restructuring, actually. So we're getting close. Briefly on insurance items, the Wrangell warehouse and office, we did receive some feedback on that, I believe today, that, you know, the adjuster is essentially saying, go forward, put out an RFP and get some firm bids. So that'll be the next process to update, you know, to write an RFP and get that out on the street, get it bid, bring it back to the board, and have a discussion. There may be, we'll have to create an R&R for that, and there may be some out-of-pocket expenditures for SEPA if we want to change anything from, you know, the original design or anything like that. But I don't anticipate that to be a lot, but we don't know. We haven't seen the adjusters. Opinion, if you will. So on the cable failure, those failed ends have been received at the lab, and so we're just awaiting to hear what their findings are on the preliminary. I talked about that a little bit earlier. They'll do some non-destructive testing, and then they'll inform us if we have to take it another step further. Segueing on to the best practices and process improvements, I always keep this in my report because I think it's important to, you know, inform the board. There's a lot of stuff that we've been doing behind the scenes just to implement best practices, to improve our internal processes. We're continually doing this all the time, you know, from completely transitioning our accounting system to a new one. You know, we didn't have to do that, but it just made sense. We get a better product. It takes less resources at the end of the day to manage it. And so we're always looking for these opportunities, and there's a lot going on and a lot of staff time that goes into to making that all happen. And I will note that, you know, we're full on into this 4-hour plan review. And I did note it in my report that we had some site visits done from just a engineering review of specific equipment. The challenge is, you know, that window is very small during our limited outages, and they can't look at everything, and essentially it's a visual inspection as opposed to, you know, major testing of items. You know, so they'll look at our maintenance histories and the testing that we have completed over the years and try to make a general assessment. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to achieve with the 4-hour plan is a sanity check on our life expectancies. Is it reasonable if you go out there and it's pristine and it says on the report it's supposed to be replaced in 5 years or it's due for replacement now? You make some general with a professional eye assessment said it could easily go another 10 years or 15 or 20. And hopefully that lends a little bit more specificity on our projections on lifetime expectancies. Another thing we looked at and are looking at still are those opportunities for life extensions rather than a full wholesale replacement. There's clearly areas in there that the way they're currently depicted in the current plan is probably not realistic. For an example, we're not going to replace a whole transmission line. We're going to do assessments on the poles. We're going to do little segments as they deteriorate. Maybe one section deteriorates faster than others. That's just a simple example. So we're looking for those opportunities. We're going to do the best we can on this 4-hour plan update and then continue to work on that. And as noted in there, we do these every 5 years. So the idea is to keep refining this over time. But I think this effort that we're undertaking this year is a deeper dive than we've ever done. So, I did provide a few bullets on the strategic plan. We talked about different elements during today's meeting, and I just kind of highlighted, you know, what the expectation here was on Q2 and essentially what's remaining for the rest of the year. And I think we touched on a few of those things. You know, one of for the remainder of the year, you know, in the December meeting, one of the strategic plan deliverables is hydro generation recommendations and costs for the board to consider on a new project, and also some generation and load projections. But we kind of already do that in the ops plan, but we'll try to refine that and kind of marry it to our load forecast from the past, and maybe extrapolate that out update it with real data, and then extrapolate it out for what we anticipate. Excuse me. And one of the other ones, hiring a control systems engineer / IT guy or person, I should say. And that's currently in progress. I've got an interview set up with a gentleman tomorrow. And so we'll have a conversation. I want to pause here just for a second and talk about the personnel challenges. I think anybody, I'm sure everybody on the phone today realizes that the labor market is extremely tight right now. The statistic I read today, it was there's like 10.9 million jobs vacant right now. And, you know, and everybody I've talked to in our industry, they're having difficult hiring people. I know the local municipalities are having a real hard time hiring folks and retaining them. And, you know, wages are going up. in order to attract new folks as well as retain the ones you have, which I think is even more important. The, so there's some dynamics in the personnel area that, SEPA's gonna have to deal with. I'm speaking in general terms now, but I think we're at a point in history here with regard to the mobile workforce and a recognition that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be in the office to do your job most of the time. You know, we may want to consider some hybrid positions where if you can't find, you know, somebody that's got the high technical expertise that you're looking for, that's willing to live full time in Ketchikan or one of the other member communities, then, you know, I think we're going to have to keep somewhat of an open mind on, you know, do we work out a hybrid where maybe they are required to spend a week or two a month in the office and then they can work remotely from their other location. You know, another thing that plays into that big time is the cost of living. And, you know, people know that they can live somewhere else and have a lot higher standard of living and work remotely. So I think we have to recognize those challenges and adapt to them. And I know that there was quite a bit of opposition in the past when SEPA had an employee that lived out of state. And I just encourage the board to kind of acknowledge and think about some of the challenges that we're all going to have hiring and you know, how we might achieve our objective of, you know, bringing those skill sets under the umbrella and getting the work that you want, but still having some flexibility there. So I'll stop right there, and if anybody's got any questions or comments, happy to field them.
I have a question, Chair, Mr. Chair. I'll just go ahead. Trey, what kind of recruiting tool are we using for that actual recruiting action that we currently have for the control systems and IT person?
So we do a broad electronic recruitment. We haven't hired a headhunter. We use all the major channels for the utility industry. You know, and a lot of that gets pushed out through Indeed and then kind of spurs out from there as well. You know, and then also, you know, we do, recommendations from other folks. You know, just being in tune with the marketplace and all the players that are in the market and who's looking for opportunities. And that part is always underestimated. And, those connections often lead to, somebody maybe applying, right? And, you know, the reputation and the visibility of your organization out in the utility industry. And you demonstrate cool projects that you're doing that were highly successful. You talk about your successes, and those are the type of places people want to migrate to. So I think it's a combination of things in answer to your question.
With that being said, out of curiosity, if we were to go the route of hiring a recruiter, what kind of money are we looking at for something like that?
It can be really expensive. Depends on the position. Sometimes it could be half a year's salary.
Okay.
Minimum $50,000, but I think going rates depends on the position and what the salary is. But
thank you for that. I have some other comments later during our closing comments, but no questions at this time. Thank you. No further questions. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jeremy. Anybody else? All right, you through Trey, you got anything else you want to add?
I think I'd prefer to defer my time to the other guys. They spent a lot of time putting together some really great reports, and I want to give them an opportunity to talk about some of the great things they're doing.
All right, so let's move on to that. Let's go to number 9, staff report. First one is the Director of Engineering and Technical Services, Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Trey, or Mr. Chair. We talked about the 4R plan, and we talked about looking at our major assets and determining what life they have left, but then also identifying what assets can we extend the life on them. And this is one of those. Swan Bailey Transformer refurbishment project. We're up there 35, getting up close to 40 years old on these transformers, and that's industry standard, 40 years. So we do testing every year, and inside they look amazing, but outside, as you can see, they didn't look so good. Bushings were getting pretty rough. The seals, starting to get rough. We had one leaking. So we went through and put a contract together approved by the board, and we replaced all new seals, all new gauges, all new bushings, and all new connections. And so these transformers at this point should make it another 20 years instead of having a replacement within the next 5. That's what we are looking at for life extension, where a huge added value now is deferred. We don't have to spend that cost, and we can defer that a little bit down the road. So that's an excellent project. We're going to be looking at how that integrates into our other substations in Petersburg and Wrangell. I'll be heading up to Petersburg here next week, actually, and start looking at their site there and see what we can do to upgrade that, because really without the substations, we can't deliver the power. So we want to make sure our transformers are in tip-top shape and our substations are repaired and ready to go.
So, Robert, on that particular picture, could you show me where the seals are that you're talking about, maybe where the bushings are in regards to what you're replacing?
Or
that internal stuff?
So these are coolers here.
Yep.
And so in order for the oil to get from inside the transformer to the cooler, there's a seal. So those seals were all replaced. This is a high voltage bushing. You take in 115,000 volts. It goes through a winding, and then it comes out at 13,800 volts on this side here. So every one of these bushings actually inside this transformer is a winding, a bunch of copper in oil. And so those have to be, sealed. So when you put new bushings on, you get new seals. You're not seeing it, but on the other side of the transformer, there's gauges, temperature gauges, and then nitrogen gauges. All of those have to go inside the transformer, so there's seals on those. So all the protection, all the protective equipment, all the seals for the transformer, once you get that done, you get that all brand new. You can add a nitrogen blanket on top. You're just injecting nitrogen, and that actually prevents you from having any condensation inside the transformer. Now you've got oil and no condensation, and with the testing that we do on our oil samples, the transformers look amazing. So it was a matter of maintaining that good standard that they're in. So yeah, I would say probably the 4R plan is looking at a 15 to 20 year increase in life on those.
Excellent job. Thank you.
Swan Lake Station switchgear, that's going along really well. They've actually got, even since when I wrote this, that was 10 days ago, all this equipment is downstairs. Most of it is. They've got their distribution equipment hooked up. They connected in a temporary power panel, and we're actually operating one of the units on that temporary panel right now. So that project is moving along very quickly, and going very well. We'll be looking at in 10 more days. We'll be having some commissioning engineers down on site. We're going to start connecting to our SCADA system and start doing some of our preliminary testing. So, we'll see. About the first week in October, we should be completed, and that will be fully commissioned. if we go back and recall why we did this project, is we had stuck breakers. The switchgear is, you know, obviously, again, we're saying 35 years old. There was no life extension for this gear. It was, you just had to replace it. And so that's some of the things that, you know, that even in the 4R plan, there's just no way you can give a life extension on some things. So we're identifying those that we can and replacing those that we can't, preemptively, and making sure we keep reliability. But yet we don't impact our budget. The Stikine submarine cable crossing. This was absolutely amazing project. You can see here what the old cable looked like. Basically that cable, this is best case scenario for SEPA as well, because who knows what really happened to it. If we found an anchor on it or something, or we found that it was rubbing on the wall on some rock somewhere for 30 years or something, those could have been really challenging type failure mechanisms to get the insurance company to actually say, yes, this is insurable. But this was obviously, it was a landslide. The cable was on the top side where the cable was. It was in the mud completely. And on the bottom of it, it was stretched all the way down kind of a cliff that looked like it'd been washed a little bit. And, so it was a sudden event. So if the insurance company comes back in their testing says differently, I think we're going to have a fight on our hands, because all the experts in the field and all the experts that we know are saying, oh, that was definitely an event, and that should, you know, that's all we need to know, because the event, anytime a sudden event happens, and that's covered by insurance. So we'll see how that goes. But looking on that right picture, you can see the new cable. Obviously it's a very large cable. Those floats out there, they actually got hooks underneath them, and they float the cable under the water, and they float it into the shore with those. You got divers in the back there. So there's divers in the water floating the cable. You've got land ops. What you don't see behind you, just for, you know, because there's not, I don't want to add too many pictures to the board report, but you've got excavators on the land. You've got men pulling the cable, excavation. There's rollers going up. And I'm putting together a video right now, and it's just going to document the whole thing. So I'm hoping to have that done by the December board meeting. You guys will get to see that project from tuition to fruition. And I think that's just going to be an excellent, excellent thing for the board to see how, you know, how we get business done. We're also working on a transmission and distribution world magazine publication. Sumitomo approached us. Sumitomo was actually approached by T&D. And so the caveat to producing that is the author has to be the utility, or in this case, SEPA. So we're authoring it, and hopefully we'll see that, you know, they'll publish it at the right time. They want to make sure they get the most impact to their customers. But hopefully we'll see that within the next 6 months or so. We'll see if Southeast Alaska submarine cable. So that'll be kind of fun. Any questions on the submarine cable project?
Sounds good.
Moving on. These ones will be fairly quick. The SEPA and RTAC, we're making a connection between the headquarters here and KPU. And with that, we can actually get our sticks page that's on our website right now. It's pretty clunky. You have to hit refresh every minute or whatever it takes. It's not very conducive for KPU operators to look at the system and know how to react if there's an issue. So they typically call TAI and they ask what's going on, but real time, they don't get that information. This connection will make that happen. So right now, this one's pretty much done. We're just waiting on a communication link between KPU and SEPA, and that's being done through KPU Telecoms. So hopefully we'll wrap that up in the next few weeks. The HMI 6 project, that is moving along very nicely. You know, part of that project is also station service, where we got to integrate station service at Swan Lake into it. But that project is moving along very nicely. The exciter dust collectors, that one there, I think that was a fun one because, you know, the guys in the field got to be hands-on, and they did the install on it with an expert from Mersin USA PTT Corp. was on site with them telling them what to do. But they were able to install that, and that really gives these guys ownership in it. And so when you feel like you're owners of something, you maintain it better, and you just, you know how to work on it a lot better. So those kind of projects are a lot of what we like to do as much as we can, because it really, first of all, the trying to train these guys on it is a lot easier because they installed it. They don't really need as much training on it, and they remember how it works and all that. So that was very successful. It's removed a lot of the dust. The guys are saying that, you know, they go to wipe it now, and it's just barely any dust on the rag. So it's really removed a lot of dust out of the top of those units, which causes tracking and causes arcing and sparking and a lot of problems. So it's really turned out to be a good project. The gate bubbler system, we're just waiting for our contractor to come on site, and we'll install it. But the programming and everything is complete. HMIs are complete. So this is another one, the Petersburg and Wrangell fiber build out. That is, you know, we were talking about Skywrap. That'd be a Tyee Swan Ketchikan fiber build out. But what we effectively have going on right now is we have a pole attachment agreement with GCI. They attach to our poles in Petersburg, and they attach to our poles in Wrangell, and their fiber routes on our poles. And part of that agreement was that they would provide SEPA with four T1 connections of bandwidth. But we never utilized it. We, for some reason throughout the years, we never actually tapped into that connection. So working with GCI, and I think the reason why we didn't do it is because there was no actual drop into the location. So the fiber was on our poles, but we didn't have it into our locations. So the board approved us to make those drops and connect to those sites. And so far, Petersburg and Wrangell sites have all been connected, and now we're waiting for engineering to just splice and put the actual device on it. It looks like they'll be coming out next week to do the splicing, and then in a week after that, we should have it connected. But what that's going to do is, and I talked about in the next one, the Burnett Peak decommissioning project. What this will do is, first of all, it gets us off the internet for our SCADA in Petersburg and Wrangell. Yes, we are on the internet, and we're encrypted. And so we, you know, it's part reason why we're so sensitive to cybersecurity is because we want to know, well, is encryption still working, and how cyber secure are we? This will actually do, like I mentioned with the Skywrap, is now you're on a dedicated network. You're on a dedicated fiber network. You know, being able to hack that is nearly impossible. I mean, you'd have to probably get in there and actually connect it physically. So that really gets our cybersecurity down to as tight as we can get it. Another thing that also adds is we've got a lot of communication expenses, and Kay can talk about it all day long. But when I got here, it was like, whoa, that we're spending a lot of money on a lot of different things. This will actually, right now we're spending about $60 a month on these phones, and another $60 a month on the connection to the SCADA. So you start adding those up, you're, you know, $400 or $500 a month. When this is all said and done, we'll be spending about $3 a month per site. So a lot of savings there. You're not only saving the company money, but you're also adding that security. So when this gets said and done, that's going to be a great addition to the SEPA network. Kind of moving into the Burnett Peak microwave decommissioning project. Part of that mesh network we've been going through for quite a while now, where we've got satellites at all completed at Swan. We got satellites completed at Taiyi. And Carl Hagerin kind of hinted on it, like we've been having issues with it. We got most all the ripples flattened, and we've got all the bugs worked out of the system. And what that allowed us to do was actually decommission the Burnett Peak microwave. At the time, it was already down and it wasn't operational for about 6 months. And so we had an option. We were either going to try and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to try and replace the equipment, put new equipment up there, or decommission it and operate off the system that we installed. So because it was unreliable anyways, when it got icy, it didn't make sense to maintain a site on top of a mountain that when an ice storm wouldn't work. So we decommissioned it. By doing so, we actually reduced our cost of doing business for that network by $6,000 per month. So that's a huge also benefit to SEPA as well, is trying to reduce these expenditures in the, you know, as technologies move forward, there are ways to reduce the cost. And so finding those ways and actually implementing them is a big way to try and keep the rates and try and balance the budget. So anyways, that's what I got there. Back to you, Mr. Chair, if anyone's got any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you for that presentation, Robert. Hearing seeing none, let's move on to item B, which is the operations manager. Clay, what do you have for us?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't really have a whole lot substantial to add to the body of the report that you probably all already had a chance to review already there. So the only thing I would touch on, I guess, just really briefly here is the GoPro transmission line survey that we did. And what an amazing tool that is going to be as we move forward with this our vegetation management plan and just our brushing plan in general, as well as transmission line maintenance and that kind of thing. I really look forward to our next face-to-face meeting when we can post the footage from this thing up on the big screen and actually show all the board members what this program and this platform is actually capable of doing. Showing you these three pictures that were actually recorded simultaneously doesn't quite do it justice. When you see it as an actual video feed, it's pretty doggone impressive. It's as close to sitting out there on a helicopter skid in person as you can possibly imagine, except that it's also being recorded, so you can go back and review it at will anytime you want, and you can look up, down, sideways, forwards, backwards, whatever, and even zoom in on specific areas. So really a handy tool, and look forward to being able to demonstrate that to the rest of the board members there. But other than that, if anybody has anything specific in regard to my report, I'd be happy to field any questions that you might have. But other than that, I'm going to go ahead and forward the balance of my time on to the next gentleman in line here.
Thank you, Clay. Are there any questions for Clay in regards to his presentation? I love the Oh, you got a flying saucer. Hey, cool.
Yeah. Coming soon to a space station near you.
Yeah. Is there any questions for Clay in regards to the presentation that he just gave? I apologize for not having enough time today to get through all of it, because it's always interesting to see what we're doing in the field and what we're working on. So with that, it'll bring us to the power system specialist. So, Ed, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, I'll be brief. I know you guys have all had way more fun than you could stand already with this. But Swan Lake, one of the things I want to point out is, like with our MapCon, we've been doing an extensive revamp of our MapCon, updating all of the we've been doing training for the guys out there, but we've also been rewriting all the tasks and bringing those up to industry standards. So stuff is 1992 to 96 vintage that's in it right now. And this MapCon is a very powerful tool. It can do inventory to taking and putting actual equipment manuals within the tasks. You can have your drawings in there, but one of the biggest restrictions that we're finding with this MapCon is our communications path. We have all this technology to be able to use this. We've made the improvements. We've got the drawings submitted into each one of the tasks. So if you're going to work on a breaker, the drawing that pertains to that particular breaker is there, but you're looking at a 10-minute access time and the guys don't do it. So boy, this fiber wrap, and there's an unmeasurable amount of time savings that would come from that. Not only through this MapCon process, but I have a Wednesday meeting with the guys every single week, and there's not a week that goes by that there isn't a discussion about issues we're having with our communications paths. The incomplete sequences with the units starting and stopping, it goes on. And it's been that way for 6 years that I've been dealing with this stuff. So moving on from that to Federal Energy Regulatory, that's one of my tasks. It's never ending. We go from one report right into the next. This monitoring and surveillance report, that's an annual report that was submitted. That's just a third-party review of our maintenance program to assure FERC that we're doing an appropriate job at maintaining all these facilities and that our assets are staying at our reliability standards. SEPA headquarters, that's our new office here in Ketchikan. We're moving from the 65% design phase into the 100 right now. We're a little bit behind time or our schedule. We were looking at an October issue of the RFP. We're going to say that we're about 3 weeks behind right now. So it's probably going to be November before that's ready to go out on the street, but it's progressing well. And hopefully we have some interested bidders and we can be competitive on that. Tai'i intake project. This is a ongoing 3-year job. I've talked to this body multiple times about this project. It's a logistics nightmare just to stay at the minimum. We just spent 16 days up there nonstop trying to complete this. And out of that 16 days, we had one day that we got there on time and left on time just due to weather access issues. It's a absolutely, I got to give the BAM crew, they just put their head down and kept charging through it. Every day was a challenge. We had issues trying to fly gear in and out of there. We'd get 2 or 3 picks made. You see those stems there. There was 18 of those. Those weigh 360 pounds apiece. We flew all of those in, all the old ones out, and weather that was not conducive to flying these. We would fly a couple, the plane or the helicopter would get grounded on one end or the other, and we waited out. It was absolutely a challenge. So this is a picture of the HPU after being in its new home. It's up topside. This used to live 200 feet underground. It was subject to 100% moisture. All the electrical devices on it would fail within days after repairing them. It's now up topside. It's dry. It's accessible. So this job in itself has all been a huge success. This shows where our limit switch for the controls is now. It lives on the very first landing. So that every one of these landings is a 20-foot descent to another landing till you get to the work platform 200 feet below. The limit switch, which controls the gate open and close, it now lives 20 feet from the top. And then there's just a stainless steel cable that goes down to the cylinder to give indication of movement for the cylinder. The rest of this is just all pictures, just to try to give the board a reference of what was worked on. So the gate's been completely refurbished now. This is the first maintenance that's been done on this thing in 37 years. It'll last another 37 years without a doubt. Industry standards is this is to be pulled out and inspected at a minimum every 5 years. The new MAPCON PM task will dictate that, and we have the ability to do that now. So, any questions? All right, thank you.
Any questions?
Great job, Ed. Amazing.
Yeah, that is a good job. So, Ed, on the proposed building, are we panel side, or I mean, what type of construction are we looking at?
It's going to be a steel building construction, but it's a monolith type construction, so that it's an open span because of the warehouse downstairs and the boardroom that reside in that first story. So it's a external skeleton type steel building with metal siding, metal roof, low maintenance has been the goal, and of course the aesthetics as well.
So are you talking insulated panels?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Anybody else have any questions for Ed? So we have our calendar before us. Our next meeting is scheduled for December 10th. That calendar will change a little bit in regards to maybe a special board meeting to discuss our evaluation process. And we'll notify you of that. And if we were to have that in person, where would that be at, Sharon?
You're on mute.
It would be Ketchikan, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Hopefully, times allow. It'd be nice to see everybody in person and have an opportunity to visit with everybody and have those discussions, especially when we do executive session stuff. So if at all possible, try to plan for traveling to that particular venue. Sharon would make the reservation, but we'll try to make that decision early on for board members planning. Anything else on the calendar? Seeing none, bring this down to director comments. And so we can start with, let me see where I'm at here. So I'll start with Doug. Are you still on?
I am, Bob.
What do you have for us?
Well, I would have to say today, reading the packet yesterday and went through it today, I think I'm beginning to understand what CEPA does and a little bit of how they do it. So it's still on a pretty steep learning curve, but I guess I'm comforted knowing that level of expertise we've got, dedication of our staff, keep the lights on and all that stuff is for us. So thank the staff for working in the room today in the fields, and look forward to learning more about the business of supplying to a lot of others.
Thank you, Doug. Jeremy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick comments.
I know that some of these things have been mentioned that we would be able to hear in December. We were going to be discussing the cable spare, and hopefully we can get a little more information on that and what kind of a cycle in life we'd have with that storage and all of that. So look forward to that. Trey and you and your crew doing a fantastic job. Really glad you guys are looking forward into the future with regard to infrastructure money. The fiber project would be a phenomenal plus for the organization if we can get, especially if we get some federal money for that. And then continuing to look for other shovel-ready projects pending federal money. The rates, it sounds like something that we'll be talking about coming up at the next meeting, the next regular scheduled meeting in December. I'd hope to see some really good options there for us to be able to choose from and make an actual vote for progress with that. The I have a request for a presentation on from Director of Engineering at the next meeting with regard to the operation of the Swan Gates. I know we've had quite a bit of time with some water on them and being able to work those. Just maybe an update on that would be really nice. Appreciate it. And then I think I'll finish off with the recruiting. I know that we've got lots of challenges with recruiting. If I had my preference, I'd prefer to see our new employee here in Ketchikan. If bonuses and or additional pay is a requirement to make that happen as opposed to some kind of a hybrid or out-of-state employee, I think that'd be better for the organization, better for the community. So I'd be definitely willing to entertain a different kind of structure, bonus structure, something like that to get somebody here in town. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you for all the good work, everybody.
Thank you, Jeremy. Cliff, are you still on?
I'm here. I'd mirror what Jeremy just said. I think staff's doing a tremendous job as usual. Just an incredible amount of information and what seems like a long time, but a very short time as we're pushing the 5 o'clock hour. But, I think the things that, I was really impressed with how the submarine cable was handled, how fast it went along, how staff was able to push the project along, keep it in budget, and also how the staggering of the bond liabilities is, I was pretty impressed seeing that, how we'll exhaust one and still not go overboard with having too much money owed for bond obligations. So again, impressed with our financial management and looking out, I'm curious or not curious, but looking forward to further discussion on the rate increase. I know it has to happen. It's a way to keep our facilities up. We haven't had one in a long time, and see how we'll develop a strategy for addressing that with the communities and ratepayers on the ground. But otherwise, great meeting, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Definitely echo Cliff's statements on the submarine cable project. As Petersburg is the primary beneficiary. We all benefit from it, but as Petersburg is really at the end of the line here on the other end of that cable, I don't think I can thank staff enough for their work on that, how well it came together. Just an excellent project all the way around. Excited to see the article and the video that Robert mentioned being put together. I also want to thank the board for the continued support of that project, you know, moving along at such a rapid rate for a benefit. So I just feel that I need to say that as often as I have an opportunity to. And also wanted to thank Trey and the staff for the work on the vegetation management plan. I do think that is a really important aspect. And even though it is going to cost more money, I think it's money well spent, and it helps out with the entire system's reliability. And it's something we need to do. So those are the high points I wanted to touch on. So thanks. Great meeting.
Steven.
Yeah. Similar to what everybody else said, but I think one of the things I might add is that I appreciate that it was a tough call to not have our meeting in person. I enjoy the in-person meetings, and I actually have found this to be an incredibly difficult year not to be able to speak with other board members directly or the SEPA staff. I think there's always great transmission of ideas when we get together and have a chance to sit down and have dinner and chat. So, but I also appreciate that we've got to keep everyone safe. So thanks to SEPA for looking out for that, to the staff for looking out for that. Again, I'm constantly amazed at the productivity of this group. I'm overwhelmed to see how much is completed, and I feel badly. I would like to propose that in our next meeting, we start with staff reports and give our staff more than enough time to tell us about what they're doing and explain to us and allow us to ask questions and truly understand all the work that they're getting done. I hate it that they're put at the end of our meetings and we have to rush through and, you know, Clay can't explain all the things he's got going on or Ed or whoever. I would really like next meeting that we change up our agenda so staff reports come first and then we can hear the other stuff later on, but I don't want to cut them short again. But thanks to everybody and what a wonderful organization to be involved with.
Thanks for that, Stephen. I like to thank staff for everything they do, but I'd also like to thank the representatives of the member communities. In the past, you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of mistrust and lack of understanding, and we just really didn't know each other. And over the time that I've been on this board, it's amazing how we've come together to have common interests in regards to how we view SEPA as the agency that supplies us all with our wholesale power. And as Carl said, as much as he can't say enough thank you for what we've done. Your community is just as important as our community, as any of the communities, in regards to having reliable power and whatever it takes for all the communities to, through their purchase of power, to support that. I think it's in the best interest of everybody. And as I've always said, is whatever's good for SEPA has got to be good for the community because it serves us well. And again, right back to Trey and all the staff, you guys go above and beyond. It seems like there's so many things going on in so many different directions, and yet you do it in an exemplary fashion. So I'd like to thank you for that. I'm looking forward to December. Hopefully we can meet in person. I'm also looking forward to working with Joel and starting to compile the information for the December meeting in regards to the evaluation. That's always an important part of our process as we go through this. It's interesting is that when we step away from our community and sit on this board, you're supposed to put on your SEPA hat, and it's impossible to take off your community hat at the same time. But remind people that SEPA operates on a different platform than our local governments do. So with the challenges that we've had budgetarily in our communities, it doesn't always relate to the budgetary issues in regards to a wholesale power company with free customers. So I just want to ask you to keep that in mind as you go through that evaluation and not necessarily use just the economic in your community, but look at the SEPA for what it is as in regards to a wholesale power company. So with that, thank you again. I'd also be remiss if I didn't thank Carl Lamelon for all of his time spent on the board. Carl was a tough cookie in regards to supporting Ketchikan's positions. But I found that as time went along and we got the prickly point things out of the way, he was more than a supportive member of this board in regards to keeping the wholesale power rate reasonable and providing for very reliable platform in regards to the management of water and power for the three communities. So I'd like to thank him for that. And with that, I have nothing else. Is there anything from staff that and follow up that they want to speak to?
Trey, I just like to echo your sentiments there with regard to Carl. I was always appreciative of his comments, and they were always thoughtful, and I believe supportive as well. So I do appreciate his years of service on the board as well. Also, just wanted to take a second just to recognize my staff. They really have. I've just done a Herculean lift over this whole summer. There's just been a lot going on, and everybody has contributed on the staff in a big way. So I'm very appreciative of that. And then I'll just close with appreciate the engagement with the board and look forward to quarterly calls with each individual just to kind of touch base and make sure we're staying aligned. And I appreciate the time you've taken today. I know this is a long meeting, but it's somewhat reflective of the amount of work that's being done. And there was just a lot to go through. So thank you for your patience and appreciate the opportunity to serve.
Thank you. So with that, I'd entertain a motion for adjournment, I guess. Let somebody else
Chairman.
Add. All right. Do I have
Mr.
a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Second.
And are there any objections?
No objection.
Without objections, we will stand adjourned. Thank you.